returning back to this whole idea of mobility of investment capital, it's so much easier now to relocate. I mean, just talk to an employee of Electromotive Diesel in London, talk to an employee of Avios in Winnipeg. You know, just look at all of these operations that have moved abroad to China, the maquiladoras, and I mean, I'm just, you know, maybe trying to touch on this idea that we have all of these reforms in place, and if you are effectively promoting that more sort of egalitarian mode, a fair tax or a tax and spend popularity campaign, whatever you want to call it, fair tax movement, that has to come go along with other sorts of reforms.
Absolutely.
I don't see how, those transnational entities, the trade agreements and so on, that
that's an interesting point. Business has succeeded in putting in place not only tax laws that favor their interest, but a whole set of laws, privatization, deregulation, that are kind of built into a lot of these trade pacts. Well, there's nothing magical about those laws. Those laws didn't need to be put in place. Those laws, there's no evidence that they help economic growth or anything like that. Those laws favor business interests over ordinary workers. And that's why they were put in place. And, you know, they can be removed.
And consequently, we do have a situation where the wealthy, the people who've been pushing that agenda, have gotten wealthier. So
absolutely.
It worked the way it was supposed to.
Exactly. That's the thing. From their point of view, it's a slam dunk success because, you know, just to get back into the income inequality thing, what we've seen in the last 30 years is just simply a massive transfer of income and wealth from ordinary Canadians, the 99%, if you will, to the top 1%, and even bigger the higher up you go. They won. You know, there's been a class war and they won. And all the time that these new policies were being put in place, we were told, well, you know, this is going to build up capital reserves at the top. The rich are going to get richer, but there'll be trickle down. So therefore, we'd all benefit. Well, first of all, it has not increased economic growth. Economic growth was actually stronger before 1980, both in Canada and the United States. It hasn't increased economic growth. It's decreased economic growth. And to the extent that we've still had economic growth, it's all gone to the top. So how is that a satisfactory result? I would argue it's extremely unsatisfactory for the 99%. And that's why you have this dissatisfaction out there.
If the facts are as clear as you point out, why has the public gone along with this?
People don't know the facts. They don't know the extent of the problem. There's a whole slew of these arguments out there peddled by the right-wing think tanks, the well-funded right-wing think tanks, that kind of, you know, create the notion that, well, it's got to be this way. If it isn't this way, we'll all go to hell in a handbasket and we can't compete in the global economy. All these arguments about if you tax the rich, you know, it'll stymie economic growth. All that stuff, by the way, and we do this in the book, is all totally debunked. There's no evidence. It's all just rhetoric repeated constantly in the business media. There's no evidence to back it up. The stuff they're doing now, this bashing of unions, the minute there's any kind of hint of a strike in the federal sector, they're just coming in fast and hard with back to work legislation, their changes to EI, all these kinds of things. This is an out and out assault on the power of unions, and they're hoping to manipulate public opinion against unions. The effect of that is going to be absolutely clear, that if you diminish even further the power of unions, which have already power has already been diminished. Yeah, what you're doing, unions are the last bulwark of organized effort against this juggernaut by the rich to, you know, further enrich themselves. And if you take away unions, you know, or diminish their power even further, what you've got is just even greater power on the part of the corporate elite to do things their way, to take a bigger share of the pie. I mean, essentially what's been happening, that if you look at, what happens is that corporations, they're extremely profitable these days. But what they're doing is more and more of those profits go to, to CEO compensation, executive compensation, primarily through executive stock options and all that, and to shareholders, and less to their workers. So it's a kind of assault on the working man. And, mm-hmm. and if unions become more disempowered, we'll see more of that.
Now, you've been a very close observer of politics and economics for decades now. And you've pointed out how that ongoing influence and basically this how successful they have been. Have you not feel like, I mean, you've pointed to the particularly the Harper regime, but have you not detected within the general public that because of that, the strength of the propaganda system, that their own, the public's attitudes have changed, and to what extent that might be related to maybe influence from the United States, to what influence that might have to do with the reshaping of the media system here in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting question. The public attitudes are always kind of hard to really get a handle on where the public is on a lot of these things because, frankly, in many ways, the public remains really quite progressive. I was fascinated by a poll the other day in the National Post, of all places. It was a poll they commissioned, which found, it was across, national poll, and they found, the headline on it was Canada Tilts Leftward, and they were talking about how strong the leftward bias was and how, in fact, if an election was held today, the NDP would form a government. But it went on to actually assess the attitudes of Canadians on issues that had come up in Occupy Wall Street. For instance, they asked about income inequality and, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer and whether or not that was an issue. And 75% of Canadians said yes, they were opposed to that, including 63% in Alberta were opposed to that. So, I'm just saying a lot of Canadians apparently understand what's going on, apparently are concerned about it. Now, how that translates into how they vote and what, what things they support and it becomes complicated how that gets interpreted because essentially, I would argue the Harper government has been able to just ignore that and just focus on other things. And, the public
may... They can reframe the issue.
Yeah, right? Reframe the issue, convince, I saw Stephen Harper on TV talking about how, with all this stuff going on in Europe, essentially he seemed to be arguing we're going to have more austerity here in Canada. Just a nonsensical argument, frankly. But that he's the prime minister, he gets the pulpit to kind of shape the issues. People, I think, can be intimidated. They can be made fearful, whether or not they think there's too much income inequality. If they think, oh boy, what we really have to do is slash the size of the public sector or we're going to be in terrible trouble, then that fear that things are going to get worse takes over. And then they sort of forget about, oh, well, hold it, that might make things even more unequal, which I don't like. You know what I mean? Like the power to kind of manipulate these issues and manipulate public fears when you have the full resources of the state at your disposal is quite formidable.